Before we begin today, Clint asked me to share a few things with you about, I got a newsletter for Generation Word coming out. This is not a Generation Word promotion, but it is kind of interesting sometimes when you hear some things. If I don't have your address, make sure you get it to Tony or something, write on a piece of paper, and we'll send you the monthly newsletter. It may be the last one until fall. But I was putting some things together to kind of figure out what we've done this last year, trying to make it look like we're doing something as a ministry, a Generation Word. And what I did come up with is these stats, I guess. I've preached 230 messages in the last 12 months. We've recorded 150 of those on CD. We've produced 200 radio programs. And between handing out CDs and cassette tapes, we've handed out 12,000 messages on cassette or CD all around the world. Which is, I was kind of shocked when, you know, I went through all the receipts and stuff of all the, you know, CDs and everything we had. I've got a couple quotes here. When you get your newsletter, there'll be a whole page of quotes from Indonesia, Virginia, Wisconsin, Asia. Just a few of them sound like this. Kentucky wrote, "I received these tapes and have learned so much." Virginia, "I received the box of tapes and CDs. I was like a little child in a toy store. You made my day." Indonesia, "I have seen your good materials. I'm interested with your material on CD, especially about the Bible school theology." Who would want that? Indonesia does. India wrote, "I really do need such sound doctrine teaching such as you provide, and that too free of cost." Arizona, "The Got Questions CD is very popular at the truck stop." Also in that same one, something about they're trying to get into prisons. Virginia, "I can't tell you how disappointed I am that this has not been taught me by my pastor." Brazil, "Thank you for the materials, my brother." Idaho, "I want to give them out at work." Ghana, "Please, sir, I need the following set of tapes and CDs in the name of our God." And then lists, you know, 500 tapes. But anyway, those are some things that we've been doing, and that's just kind of lets you know. And that is a direct outreach of what we're doing here. We're picking up. We're on the Atlantic station, obviously. We're in Des Moines at a station. We're in Chattanooga, but this next month we're picking up another station. Chattanooga called and wants our program, and then Kansas City and Albuquerque will be starting in the month of June also with a 50-minute daily program. So that'll give us five stations. Is that right? No. 6 stations that we'll be on, and three of those will be daily. So anyway, that's what's happening with our ministries as we continue to try and reach Audubon, try and reach Iowa, reach around the nation, and trickle out into the world as people are responding. We are at a crisis in our nation, of course, as a nation itself, society. Did a wedding yesterday, and is a great couple, a wonderful two families that united their son and daughter in marriage. And I referred to the verse in Malachi chapter 4 that says that God will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, meaning he's going to try and bring, at that time in Israel's history, try and bring the families back together, which will begin with the marriage relationship, and then the fathers becoming interested in their children, the children starting to follow their father's godly leadership. God says, "I will do that, or else I will strike the land with a curse." And the option is one of two things. Either we begin to restore family values, we begin to restore fathers' interest in raising their children in a godly way, and children that are following a godly example at this time in history, or else if we continue on the path we are, things will just continue to decline. Things will get worse. Sin begats more sin, just as righteousness leads to more righteousness. And if we do not make a change, it's our responsibility as a church. We are the salt, Jesus says. We are the light. If we don't share that salt, if we don't share the answers, if we do not stand up and we live righteously and help spread righteousness in our own lives, in our families, in our communities, then we are in trouble. And that's what's exciting about people wanting to hear CDs, hear Bible teaching, because around this world, is around the nation, people are stepping out and wanting to learn. Different ministries are stepping up and teaching. We're at a great time in history right now, and it's good to be part of the Faith Evangelical Free Church here in Audubon, working with you and what we're doing. I want you to open your Bibles, please, the book of Proverbs. I've got an idea of what I think we should do, and I'm going to take a shot at it. And I've told Tony to get ready to give me some feedback on the way home today of how this goes. So if you have any input, tell Tony afterwards. She'll break it down and make it gentle enough for me to take if it's critical. But we spent last week talking in an abstract form, and I heard about that on the way home, about wisdom, this identity, this woman called wisdom that is in our streets, that is crying out everywhere we go, wisdom is speaking to us. And we traced wisdom back to find out that wisdom is not just something that is among us today, but it goes back into eternity past, before time, that wisdom, that she was with God in eternity past. And that wisdom was excited about creation and excited about mankind, that wisdom could extend knowledge, her wisdom, her understanding into us, that we might enjoy God's creation, that we may be prosperous and successful in what God has made. When God made the world, He made it for success. He made it for us to achieve what He's called us to do. But we got to have the ingredient of wisdom to plug into that to do what God's called us. We cannot come into God's creation and then make up our own rules. It doesn't work that way. It's not designed to work that way. The creation that God made is designed to work with the wisdom that God has established. It is the foundation on which He's established it. With that in mind, we now turn to Proverbs chapter 10. And here we see 32 proverbs, or little sayings. Each of them is a capsule of wisdom. Each of them is an insight. It can become tedious. It can become monotonous. But as we begin this, I do want to have you hold your place there and just flip back to page 2, or chapter 2. Because as I look at this, I'm wondering, how in the world can I keep your attention to get through the Proverbs? We can't just say, well, there's 30 chapters or so here. We can't just read it on your own. I mean, we can say that, but I feel obligated, and maybe I shouldn't, but I feel obligated to at least entice you to look at these. And as we ended last week saying, the wisdom of God is in our creation. It's in our world. It's all around us. But sometimes we walk right past her. It says she's crying in the streets. She's in the gateways, wherever the roads cross. She's crying out to us, oh man, simple man, come and listen to me. But how often do we go through life and we don't even bump into, during the day, don't even bump into the wisdom of God? It's here. Proverbs is like I said as we closed last week, it's like a little cheat sheet, kind of gets you started. You see wisdom here? You see wisdom, kind of get an idea of what she looks like. And now you know what you're looking for. So when you go through your life and you go into your job or you meet with people or you're just going through your daily routine, all of a sudden you're going to start seeing her pop up at different places and she's going to start presenting herself. Here it is. And you can continue to grow. So we're going to look at this and we're going to see if we can bring this together. But it's going to require concentration. Listen to this, Proverbs chapter 2, verse 1. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding. You see right there, if you cry out for insight, if you call aloud for understanding, it's not something that's like, well, if you just come sit in church, it's just going to drip off on you and you can go out with. No, this is, you're crying out, you're seeking for it. It goes on. It says, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure. You see, if a treasure is hidden, not everybody's finding it. It's buried somewhere. It's going to take a map. It's going to take some effort. It's going to take some thought. You've got to uncover. You've got to discover it. And not everybody has it. That's why it's called a treasure. If everybody had it, it wouldn't be a treasure. It'd be like common. Wisdom is like a treasure. Not everybody has it. It just doesn't fall out of trees. It's there, but people miss it. So what I'm saying, what we're about to begin to do, I'm concerned with the difficulty factor of me communicating and you concentrating as we try to tap into the knowledge of God. We are not going to exhaust the wisdom of God, But I'm hoping at least to tap into it, to get a flow going, to get a drip of the wisdom of God coming out of the book of Proverbs into your life so that you can then continue to grow and expand on it. And hopefully that dripping that I can maybe present to you turn into a river and into a flood of wisdom in your life, which will then flow over into your family. It will flow over into your children, which is actually what this book is about. This book is about training your children. But if I don't know it, I can't train them. You see, if I'm still thinking like they did last generation, the generation before, and they've skipped through the book of Proverbs, because, well, that's pretty difficult, kind of boring. Well, then here I am training my children without the wisdom of God. Now, I'm not calling you fools. I'm not calling you simple. I'm not mocking the last generation of believers. I'm just saying this book is telling us to train up your children. And if we can't do it, if we don't know it. So it goes on. I just want to finish this. It says, if you'll call out for insight, if you'll cry out for understanding, if you'll look for it as for silver, search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk. He is blameless, for He guards the course of the just and protects the way of the faithful ones. In other words, if you can find that treasure, if you can tap into that flow of wisdom, then you will have victory. You will have a shield of protection. You'll be guarded and you'll be protected, all because of God is watching over the wisdom that you have. It is a way, it's a guarantee of life. Let's look in Proverbs chapter 10 and see what happens. We begin Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1. It says, the Proverbs of Solomon. And right there is just a warning. Solomon was the wisest man of all time. He had knowledge and information that God gave to him, and he recorded it. So in other words, my friends, if I ever sound critical when I'm doing this, I'm being critical of myself also. There is no room for me to second guess Solomon. All right? It's like, well, yeah, but I think it's a little, that's not exact. Oh, we'll talk about you here in a minute, because it talks about the fool who wants to continue to chatter and doesn't want knowledge. Well, yeah, but I don't really think it's this way. Okay, you've just stepped your first step towards destruction. These are the Proverbs of Solomon. Solomon received the wisdom from God, and it's recorded here. My friends, I don't have a choice. This is wisdom. It says at the first one there, the first proverb, a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son grief to his mother. Two sides here. You've got the parents' reaction and you've got the children's response. The parents are affected by your children. And as a parent, you know, and you have a feeling, you've experienced these things right here. You've experienced the joy of a wise child and you've experienced the grief of a foolish child. Well, most likely, at least I have. And it affects you. And of all the things your children can do for you, send you a Mother's Day card, you know, mow your yard, whatever your children can do, you, according to this proverb, you can set that aside. And if they will walk in wisdom, that's good enough. Forget Mother's Day, forget a Christmas gift, forget giving me a call. Just tell me, son, are you living wise? I've got joy. The card would be nice. I'd like to have the yard mowed. But are you living wise? If you're living wise, I've got joy. But on the other hand, you get the card, you get your yard mowed, and your child is living like a fool, you've still got grief. Yeah, but at least they sent me a card. Yeah, but you still got grief. The card cannot cover over what the son or the daughter is doing here. On the other side, children, do you understand? And no, they don't, because they are living in their world. They will not understand the response they get from their parents until they are parents. How many times have you talked to someone who's a child and they go through their teenage years, they get in their 20s, and all of a sudden they have their first child, and all of a sudden their whole life, their whole focus, their whole, what word am I looking for, their whole perspective changes. It's like, oh my gosh, Dad, you really felt this way about me. Yeah, son, for the last 25 years, that's how I felt. And they haven't experienced it until they've got a child. And so children, you are being told, you have your parents' heart on a string. And if you live like a fool, it doesn't matter. They can't escape. You've brought them grief. If you live wise, you are going to bring them joy that you don't even understand how much joy you're bringing to your parents simply because you're living in a wise fashion. And so it begins right here, telling you, the children and the parents, about how important emotionally, how important this is in your character of children and people in your family choosing wisdom, or the pain it has in your life if they walk in foolishness. The first thing it says in number two, ill-gotten treasures are of no value, but righteousness delivers from death. If you've got your sheets written down right there, you can kind of follow along. This is an illusion in our world of that the wicked prosper. You see wicked people with money. You see people that are not living righteously that prosper and have success. This says right here, ill-gotten treasures are of no value. They may be there for a while, but people, we don't live long enough. We don't see enough of time to see the full scale of someone's life often. We may see them live wickedly, we may see them prosper, and then we fade away or we go another direction and we just assume they stay that. The Bible says ill-gotten treasure will bring destruction. Ill-gotten treasure is of no value. But at the same time, it says righteousness delivers from death. So in other words, the greatest fear man's got, the greatest problem man has, the thing they cannot overcome is death itself. But it says in the midst of that, the greatest fear man has, the greatest problem he faces, righteousness itself will deliver you from death. Righteousness will deliver you in life. Living a righteous life will take you and help you avoid death in many situations. Death physically, death in relationships, death financially. Death can manifest in a variety of ways. Living righteously is going to help you take that step around disaster and ultimately physical death, but also spiritual death, because in the end, righteousness is going to deliver you from the ultimate death, spiritual death or separation from God. And that righteousness that we can have is something we can't attain. It's through Jesus Christ and his death on the cross. So ill-gotten treasures of no value. We've got some verses right here. Why is ill-gotten treasure of no value? Just turn the page. I've got several verses for you to look at. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 4. Why is ill-gotten treasure of no value? Because in 11:4 it says, wealth is worthless in the day of wrath. In other words, now it takes it, ill-gotten treasure is of no value. But when you even take wealth that has been accumulated in a correct way, righteous wealth, things that you've worked for, in the end, that wealth will not help you in the day of wrath. And the day of wrath is the day of God's judgment of your life. You can't say, well, yeah, but look, I can pay you off. I've got all these. It's like, no, that is of another dimension that's been going to be set aside, and the only thing that God will observe is your righteousness. So if all wealth is of no value, obviously ill-gotten treasure that you've cheated or stolen or manipulated evilly to get it is not going to be useful even at all. The next one, it says, Proverbs 10, verse 3. It says, the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the craving of the wicked. The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry. As a righteous man is living, his decisions he makes, the righteous life he lives, is going to lead him to a place where God is going to be able to bless him. And God is going to look over this in two ways, spiritually and naturally. Jesus says, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they will be filled. In other words, if you are hungering for God, if you are hungering to grow in righteousness, if you're seeking for wisdom as for a hidden treasure, you will find it. If you're seeking, God is going to make sure you get it. If you're living righteously, God is going to take care of you. Now, we're not talking there's going to be tests and trials, but we're talking about in an overall fashion, God is overlooking and he's going to take care of the righteous. He does not let the righteous go hungry. But watch this. But he thwarts the cravings of the wicked. A person who's living wickedly, a person who's making immoral decisions, God is thwarting their efforts, their desires. God is going out of his way to slow them down. He's putting, if you will, thorns in their way, rocks in their way. He is slowing them down so that they'll stop and think. If you want to find the favor of God, if you want to see God opening doors and working on your behalf, it says right here, he will work for you when you walk in righteousness or when you walk in wisdom. If you walk in an evil fashion, you may manipulate certain situations. You may get away with something once in a while, but God is against you. And there are going to come times where you cannot, the thing that he's going to put in front of you is going to be insurmountable. you are going to be struggling not just with man, but you're going to be struggling with God himself who is slowing you down. The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the cravings of the wicked. These are warnings to us. These are warnings to our children as they consider their lives, as they consider how are they going to make a decision. Are you going to live in a manipulative, evil way? Yes, I think I can get ahead. No, you can't, because ultimately God is going to be there to stop you. You may get ahead for a week. You may get ahead for a few years. But ultimately, you're going to run into a roadblock, and there is nothing that's going to help you get past it. Now listen, the Proverbs is going to eventually say, a righteous man falls seven times, but he gets up every time. I'm not saying here, now the Bible does not even present this, that you will never, if you're living righteously, you'll never have a problem. What it's saying is that when you run into that roadblock, when you come into that area of thistles and problems in your life, God will take you through it. Because you are the righteous, you will experience problems, but he will lead you through that. Somehow, he is going to take you from that place. He's working on your behalf. Where the evil man, the one that is living immorally, is going to run into that, and he's standing there at that mountain by himself, and there's no one to help him through it. We'll both see the mountain. We'll both see the roadblocks. But God is going to work on our behalf to get us through there. The unrighteous are going to stand there and be destroyed because he is, according to the Bible, working against them. Number four, 10:4 is one of my favorites. Oh, I should mention this. I had these things written down on page one there. I should say with my notes. As far as thwarting the ungodly and helping the righteous, there's a list of people right there that God helped. Joseph went to Egypt as a slave and within a few years was the number two man in the kingdom of running all of the power. In fact, sent a huge gift back to his father. Jacob left Canaan and ran away after having deceived Esau. But after God dealt him for 20 years, he came back a very wealthy person. You've got Ruth, who came from a strange land with nothing and became the mother of a kingly line. It would be David's grandmother. Esther was an orphan, but she became the queen of Persia, which was the world power of the time. She became the most powerful woman, if you could be a powerful woman in the Persian Empire, which is kind of doubtful because of the way they treated women, but she nonetheless was the queen. David, who was the eighth son, if you remember, the seventh son brought in for Samuel to anoint, and he rejected all seven of them. He said, don't you have any other sons? Well, yeah, we got David. He's out with the sheep, but he doesn't even count. That guy out with the sheep, living righteously, singing psalms to God, making godly decisions, no one even knew where he was, is going to go from the sheep pen all the way to the throne and become the line of the Messiah. God can take the righteous, he can take them to the top. But then at the bottom of the page, Pharaoh, who is the most powerful man in the world at the time, lived in rebellion towards God, and God brought his kingdom down in poverty. Nebuchadnezzar, who was the most powerful man in the Babylonian Empire, who also ruled the world, God established him. Because of his pride, God sent him out to an island for a seven-year period in exile, and he lived like a beast eating grass. It reminds me of Saddam Hussein today. Is a man who is boastful and proud, who apparently had all the power in his world. He had all the power, but in a moment, he's gone and is in a very, very similar position as Nebuchadnezzar. Lot invested in the best market lot, and Abram made a decision. Lot decided to go down towards the wealthy city of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abram stayed in the rural area and raised his cattle and his sheep. Lot took the better choice, the place of the better market, the better economy, but within a matter of a few years, he ended up in poverty, living in a cave. And then the devout Jews who gathered in Jerusalem who did not bring their best to God and did not build the temple first but built their own houses first. We read there in Malachi how everything they built was just, or everything they earned was just being blown away. That God, they had evil intention. They're trying to grab their own part instead of living righteously, putting God first. They began to lose. So you see people going from the bottom to the top because of righteousness. You see people going from the top to the bottom because of unrighteousness. Chapter 10, verse 4. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. The man who applies himself diligently to his profession or other duties will be rich, but the man who is a slacker or a sluggard will be poor, and the choice is ours. That is a biblical principle. Now, as you go through these proverbs, You're going to find them repeating throughout the chapter. It's like, well, I thought we read that back in chapter 10. The Proverbs, if I was to do these, I would categorize them, you see. I'd put all the Proverbs about money in one chapter. Then I'd put all the Proverbs about children in another chapter. Then I'd put all the Proverbs about words in the next chapter. And then we could have references. And I'd title them Proverbs About Words, Proverbs About Family Life. But what this is a weaving of the truth, almost like classes. Is you're going to go through this random selection of Proverbs, and you're going to get a handle on them. Then you go to the next chapter, and they're going to weave through them again, and they're going to hit it from different angles. Some of them are going to sound similar or the same. But as you read them, it's like you take another step. It's like going from first grade to second grade to third grade and going through the whole curriculum of just weaving. You don't just take math in first grade. Okay, open your books, kids. And you just go through from the beginning of math, you just go right all the way up to trigonometry or whatever is a high level of math in first grade. Okay, now we've got math. Now we're going to talk, next year we're going to talk about reading. And then all you do is read. You take the children, you teach a little bit each year and take them up each level. And that is what is happening here. It's introducing it, setting the foundation. It's going to weave you through these Proverbs to the end. Here it says, lazy hands make a man poor. A man who is constantly diligent will surpass the man who is lazy, slow, and avoids hard work. Now, a lot of these things are kind of obvious, but sometimes when you look at your life, you look at yourself, and I include myself in this. I mean, every one of these Proverbs, now you may be, you know, on a higher plane than me, but every time I read one of these Proverbs, it's kind of like, uh-oh. I'm doing some things right, but there is always that step up that you could improve on. And so I look at this right here, and it's simply saying a simple principle of God. It's like you can pray if you want to. You can live righteously if you want to. But if you don't work, if you don't work hard, if you're not diligent, you will not succeed. Yeah, well, I got this huge inheritance. Okay, well, it's going to talk about that too. It says, you know, a diligent man will be able to take care of the inheritance, but a man that's not diligent is going to lose even what's been given to him. This is important. A man has to be diligent if he's going to succeed. You see, it's a balance. Well, I'm just going to pray and live righteously. The world is not based on prayer and righteousness. The world is based on living righteously, praying to God, and then working hard. Do you get what I'm saying? You can't say, well, I'm just going to go two of the three. Then you're going to fail. Or, I'm just going to work real hard, but I'm not going to live righteously. Well, we've already talked about that. The man up here where it says ill-gotten treasures of no value. Don't you think the man with ill-gotten treasure is a hard worker? Yeah, I don't know any thieves personally, but I watch movies. And people that steal stuff, that's one of my favorite movies. I probably get myself condemned for saying this. But, Ocean's 11. Anybody watch Ocean's 11? Okay, good. You're a righteous people. I watched it. But Ocean's 11, these thieves, 11 guys that are working at Ocean's 12, you know, next one comes out, sequel, Ocean's 13, I'm sure is coming. But they scheme. I mean, these guys are diligent. Are they not diligent people? I mean, everything they do is planned out. It's like these guys are diligent, but they're not righteous, you see? So you see, they've learned this proverb. They know that lazy hands make a man poor. So they're going to work hard and be scheming, but they've forgotten to be righteous. Now we flip that around in the church. Well, we're just going to live righteous. Yeah, but you got to work hard. You got to be like Ocean's 11 and be diligent. But you got to be righteous too. So you can't just pick and choose the ones you want. This is your whole life. You need to live and touch on all these areas. And as we go through this, I know there are some things that I am weak in. I'm good at certain things right here. Man, I'm the poster child of some of the good things, but I'm the poster child of some of the bad things right here too. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. There's a promise. Diligent hands bring wealth. You want to get rich? You want to be successful? You want to be able to take care of your family? Then be diligent at what you do. This is the law of God, and it is a simple lesson to teach children. I'm going to read a few things here. I'd like to look at all these Proverbs, but obviously for the sake of time, I'm just going to refer to them. Diligent hands says brings financial reward. The slacker always has excuses. That'd be the sluggard. Proverbs 26:16, we'll maybe someday see that. He loves sleeping, Proverbs 20:13, which ruins men and women and brings poverty. And that's let's go back to chapter 6, that's close. Chapter 6, verse 6. And again, this is a theme throughout the Bible of being diligent and working hard. Proverbs 6, beginning in verse 6, it says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard." Now listen. Hopefully I'm helping you today. Hopefully I'm teaching you. But some may be thinking, you know, he's not making any sense. This is boring. I don't understand this. What has he got to say to me? Oh, I understand your feelings. You may be correct. But let me tell you, this is telling you then, go watch the ant. If I can't communicate, if I'm so simple, if you're so far beyond me in your understanding, if you are a sluggard, then you don't need to listen to me. You can go out here in the parking lot and find an ant colony somewhere. Just watch the ant. The ant can teach you if you're listening. And if the ant can teach you, there's a chance that I can maybe squeeze a few things in too. It says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise." In other words, forget what you think and just look at the ant. And if you will act like an ant, you'll be wise. The sluggard, if you'll just emulate an ant, you'll take a step up on the wisdom scale. In other words, an ant is wiser than a sluggard. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. You ever see ants out busy working? And it's not like there's someone telling them what to do and they're punching in, they got to put their 8 hours in. They're just working. That's all they do. It's like, who's in charge? I don't know. I'm working. I've got to work. We got to get everything taken care of. We're working. We're busy. The sluggard will work if someone's there making him work. Or if the boss walks in. Oh, yeah. You ever read Dilbert? Dilbert is funny. That cartoon. I love Dilbert. I have to explain it to Tony sometimes, and she is, because she doesn't like it. She has explained to me Baby Blues. That's not funny. Then she'll explain it to me, and then it's funny. I'll have to explain Dilbert to her because it's got a sluggard in there. It's really funny. Always over to the coffee cup, and just it's like, and that guy's so far being a sluggard that even the boss is there. He still's not going to work. You know, he's got some kind of pay plan or something, but he's got a. Here we go. Let's read this. Forget Dilbert. "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at the harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And poverty will come on you like a bandit and scarcity like an armed man." Right here, these proverbs tie poverty directly into being a sluggard. Yeah, there's got 1,000 excuses. Well, if I would take time, I could flip through here and show you your excuses. There are excuses throughout the book of Proverbs. It says, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the street, or it's snowing outside, it's too cold, it's too difficult, I don't know what to do, it's too hot. And the sluggard is he is brilliant at making excuses to justify why I'm poor. That is the book of Proverbs. Now, they say, well, I'm not here to justify poverty or whatever. I'm telling you, this is what this verse is saying. The sluggard here is poor because they won't get out of bed, they won't go to work. So now we go back to Proverbs chapter 10. It says again, lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. It goes on, I've got the notes here. We'll read some of these things. It says, he resents adversity or difficulty, chapter 20, verse 4. He will not plow because it's too cold. God says he'll put extra thorns in his way, Proverbs 15, 19, 22, 5. He's intimidated by challenges. His favorite words are, I can't do it, it won't work, that's not a good idea. Long-term business or career plans are overwhelming. It's too hard to think in the future. He wants something easier, success that will fall in his lap. The sluggard is looking for success to fall in their lap. If I just buy enough lottery tickets, maybe I'll get rich. That would be one of the areas. I'm not saying it's you can do whatever you want to, but that is the guy that's counting. If someday I hit it lucky, then I'll get rich. I tell you what, I'll give that. That's not even guaranteed. You can buy lottery tickets your entire life and never, never win. But according to this verse, if you will be diligent, you're guaranteed of success. You're guaranteed of having what you need if you'll go work hard. Yeah, but I could buy lottery tickets. Okay, well, I think it's chapter 26, verse 14 through 15 talks about that. You are entered the area of the sluggard. He resents authority and being told what to do by another. His rebellion keeps him from seeing that all bosses were once hardworking employees at one time. Everybody know those guys? It's you're against the man. Well, all the people that control everything. Well, everybody that is in power, most of them started at the bottom and through diligence have got to that place of success. Now, of course, a few of them just were given stuff, but if they're not diligent, they will lose that also. His rebellion keeps him from seeing that. He is seduced by vain ideas of easier and more exciting ways to make money. Proverbs 12:11, 28:19. He associates with the discontented and listens to the schemes on how they will beat the system. Chapter 14:23, chapter 21, verse 5. He is always busy planning his future success. He believes he has figured out life better than Solomon and seven successful men. That's in chapter 26:16, where he rejects advice and he's smarter than five or six or seven wise men. They can all tell him, "You're making a big mistake." I know what I'm doing. It's like, my friends, there's a place to be confident, but there's a place to understand. Just because you think it, just because it's in your mind, does not make it right. And that's hard for me. I mean, that's one thing. It's like, I'm one of those guys that I get a thought in my mind, this is what I want to do. And I've had different situations where people come and tell me, no, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but you don't see it the way I see it. Yeah, you're seeing it wrong, Galen. That's why it makes sense in your mind. You've got to step back and see some other areas. And we need to make sure we listen to advice and counsel. Let's turn to the next one because that one goes on. And we will definitely see the sluggard again. Chapter 10, verse 5. He who gathers crops in summer is a wise son. But he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. This was based on the agricultural system, that there was a time to work, and there was a time that it is not a good time to work. Meaning there are opportunities in life. Obviously, in the agriculture community, it doesn't do a whole lot of good to go out and plant in the middle of the winter, or to go out and harvest. This time you're going to look for a crop. It's useless. Now, if you step back and just look at life in general, there are seasons in time. It's like a cycle. There are times in your life where opportunities are being presented to you. And then there's times in your life where you have no options. And it comes and it goes. And you've got to be wise enough to see not just when to plant crops and when to harvest crops, but when is God presenting you, when is an opportunity passing you by? Because many people will have an opportunity to go right in front of them and they'll end up making excuses, not seeing it and miss it. And then they'll come out during when there's no opportunity and then complain about, you know, not having advantages. Classic example is, and again, I talk to my own sons, is what are you going to do for a career? Well, I just want to just make some money and get a car and just kind of hang out. Oh, well, that's cool when you're 20. It's cool when you're 21, but, you know, there may be a young woman come along that wants to, you know, get married, and then you're going to end up having children, and now you're 30, 40, and you're still just making some money and driving a car. It's like, why is this happening to me, Dad? Well, because a wise son gathers crops in the summer. That means he planted crops at the right time. He harvests crops at the right time. And right now, sons, is a good time to go out and make some plans. Just pretend you're 30. Just pretend you can imagine being 30 years old or 40 years old. Or if you're, you know, my age or younger. You know, what about when you turn 65 and 70? Have you thought about that? You see, this is the time to be preparing for the future. You see, now this is kind of ironic because I've been in church services where people talk about having faith in God. We have faith in God. God will provide all our needs. We've got faith in God. And then they do nothing about it. Well, what about retirement? Don't worry about it. God will take care of all my needs. The Bible says God provides all my needs according to his glorious riches. Well, then you watch those people grow old and retire. And it's like they don't have anything. Where's God? God's right here. Remember, his world is created on the foundation of wisdom. And when it says God will supply all of your needs, that is not a magical formula. That includes this plan right here. Wisdom is the foundation of on the world that you live in. And he will meet all of your needs in this world. He can do it supernaturally, but he's going to do it through wisdom. And if wisdom tells you to plan ahead, you can't squander the book of Proverbs and just run off into the future and say, God will meet me there. God is going to be in the future, but if you haven't had wisdom, if you've lived the way of the squanderer or the fool or the sluggard, you will get that crop. You'll get the same crop in your life as the farmer who doesn't plant at the right time. He goes out, says the sluggard goes out to look for a crop, and he goes, there's nothing there. There's a proverb that mentions, he goes out and looks, and he's a... Where's my crop? Everybody else has a crop. Well, son,
They planted in harvest, or in the time of planting. They planted in the spring. That's why they got a crop. But why don't I have a crop? Because you didn't plant at the right time. And that is not just talking agriculture. It's talking about life in general. Opportunities are not guaranteed. Life is a changing scene of prosperity and difficulty. Wise men gather all they could with extra effort and time. Meaning when it's time to plant, that's when you see farmers working 24 hours a day. Or, you know, I'm not a farmer, but, you know, I mean, they work a lot. But then all of a sudden you see them in the winter and they've got a lot of time off. Maybe. I'm not a farmer. But it's like they're burning themselves out during springtime and harvest time. And the other times during the year they've got a little more time off. There's a time to grind yourself and there's a time to back off. The wise person sees that even in life. The foolish man then dreads the extra demands and could not see the reward, so they sought to avoid the hot fields. Man, it's awful hot out right now. Yeah, but it's harvest time. Man, it's hot. This is the hot, dry season. I don't want to go out in the fields. I'm going to wait until it cools off. You wait until it cools off, the crop's gone. Another excuse. Proverbs 10, verse 6. Blessings crown the head of the righteous, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. Notice the mouth of the wicked. The blessings crown the head of the righteous. In other words, if you're living righteously, there is blessings in store for you. It's guaranteed. God is going to bless you. God is in favor. God is going to bless wisdom. Wisdom is what God built the universe on. And if you walk in wisdom, there's built-in blessings for that. If you do not, it says, violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. Now we start talking about words. And here we have what a man says and his attitude that comes from his heart, reflected in his words. Those words present a world to him that ends up destroying him. Verse 7, the memory of the righteous will be a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. The memory of the righteous, meaning a man who lives righteously, they're going to name streets after him. They're going to name buildings after him. You name certain people, if you name Lincoln or Washington or certain people's names, they inspire you. George Washington, and all of a sudden there's this image of a man who fought in a war, a man who was faithful in prayer, a man who helped establish our country. And when you think of George Washington and you hear his name, it becomes a blessing. It becomes a source of motivation. I too want to be a man like George Washington or whoever you want to mention. But there's also names of people who were losers. They were a disgrace. Their names they're not forgotten in history. It's not because, I mean, if true, we could never remember anybody that was immoral. But we got history handing down names of people that were spiritual failures. But you don't name buildings after them. You don't name streets after them. The Apostle Paul, you may name your son Paul, and I did, because of the Apostle Paul. That's a noble name. But Nero was the emperor who cut his head off, an immoral man. I didn't name my son Nero. I'll name my dog Nero. But I'm not going to name my son Nero. My son's Paul. My dog's Nero. And not really. It's Jesse, but you know. But here it says right here, the memory of the righteous will bring a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. It will become useless. They still know it, but it's of no value to society. Same with you. Same with you. We've all got families. We've all got heritage. We've all got the family tree we can trace back. And people know your character. People know who you are. And they'll know who you are in next generation and then a couple generations. It seems like about 3 or 4 generations, it's like you just have names listed. You kind of forget who they are, at least in my family. But as you look back at your parents, grandparents, great-parents, sometimes your great-great-grandparents, there are names that are on that family tree. I have people in my own family tree that I remember that they were as older people, their righteousness. They are still an inspiration to me. Their memory makes me, I think about them in heaven. I think about them in the kingdom of God, having some kind of observance of what's going on here. And I think, you know, they're counting on me. They've handed down a legacy. I want to continue. I want to be in a position where they are saying, this man is continuing our legacy. They're a blessing. They're an inspiration to me. But at the same time, there are people in my family tree, in my heritage, that are not so righteous. And I try not to bring them up, try not to mention them. Except there is one particular one that's very interesting. Since you're being so patient, I'll share one with you. My great-grandfather was known as the Jesse James of Illinois. He again, you'll probably get in trouble with the family for saying this, but at least it's a legacy.
He stole horses and got shot in the back. My other grandfather, great grandfather, was a preacher. You know, so here we come right here. So I kind of fluctuate. You know, you got to watch me. Sometimes I'm preaching. Next time I'll steal your horse. But you know, we've all got stuff like that. Great stories. You know, both righteous and wrong. That's like just keeps coming down. And that's what the proverb means. It's your choice now. What do you want to leave? You want to have a story just about, you know, this guy was so corrupt, this is what he did, this is really a wild story? Or do you want something that's going to inspire people like George Washington inspires? We want our names to go on to our children and say, you know, I've got to live righteously because of my father. I've got to take the step in the right direction because of my grandfather. I owe it to him. I need to do the same thing for the next generation that they did for me. Proverbs 10, verse 9. A man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out. So he walks integrity, you're honest. If someone comes and checks on you, you're good to go. A man of integrity is secure. But a man who's got crooked paths, if someone came and checked you out, eventually your whole system is going to collapse. You know, the whole idea, you tell one lie, you got to tell two lies, now you're telling three lies, they can't keep track of all your lies. Your whole life becomes just this big deception. It's a house of cards. It's a straw house. It's going to collapse. But if you'll walk in integrity, if you'll be honest, that house at least is going to have the foundation of your integrity. Number 10, he who winks maliciously causes grief, and a chattering fool comes to ruin. Oh, excuse me, I missed number 8. The wise in heart accepts commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. Those two tie together. You got the chattering fool coming to ruin. You've got a situation where the wise of heart accepts commands. Now watch. You've got a wise man, and if you're accepting a command, that means you're not talking. The wise person is not always talking. The wise person is in a position where they're receiving instruction. They're receiving direction. So example, in this case, the wise person would not be me who's chattering. The wise person would be you who's diligently sifting through my words, trying to find a little bit of wisdom. The wise one is being quiet and is listening, but the fool is talking. And the chattering fool who's always talking is going to come to ruin. And we got some notes on that. Where's this at right here? It's on 10:8 on page 3. It says, wise men love to be taught. They accept instruction. Fools do not like to be governed. Fools would rather talk. They want you to hear their opinions. Every man thinks his own opinions are better than others, but wisdom knows this is a delusion of the human mind. And I was referring to this earlier. You all have opinions. And let me give you a warning. If you think your opinion is always right, then you're falling into the category of a fool. A wise man has opinions, but he realizes, you know, I don't know everything. And so they've still got opinions, but they're willing to hear advice, willing to accept commands, because they realize I am not the owner of wisdom. I am seeking for wisdom. The fool thinks they've already found the treasure. They think they have it, and most likely they haven't even looked for it. They just got opinions. See, just because you think something and you believe something doesn't mean it's wise. And I deal with that in my own self. You see what I'm saying? I need to realize, and I have, and that's what scares me sometimes when you start making decisions on your own. It's like, just because it makes sense to you does not mean it's going to work. Where a wise man is going to accept instruction, accept advice. And there's examples there. We could look at many of those, but let's keep going. Chapter 10, verse 15. Let's jump down to there. Let me read down all of it for verse 11. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. There again, you've got violence coming from the mouth of the wicked that's destroying them. But the righteous man is a fountain of life. What a righteous man says then is a fountain of life. It's very pleasing to be able to say something that is useful for someone else's life. Number 12, hatred stirs up dissension, but love covers over all wrongs. This is how you act socially. If you want to spend your time pointing out everybody's wrongs and how things aren't working, your hatred is going to stir up dissension and division. But love covers over all wrongs. A righteous man, a man of love, is going to allow certain things to go. It's like you're not going to point out, well, that was offensive. Just let it go. Of course it was offensive, but endure it and keep this thing going. Great way to run a church. If you want to point out everything that's offensive in a church, you get all these people together, and you can divide a church very quickly, just pointing out everybody's faults. But instead, you begin to overlook those things, stay focused on the goal, and cover over all of those wrongs.
Wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks judgment. Wise men store up knowledge, but the mouth of the fool invites ruin. Once again, a wise man is gathering knowledge, but the fool is talking, and as he's talking, he's destroying his life. This is an interesting one, and I believe this is true. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city, but poverty is the ruin of the poor. Just for a moment, step back from being ultra-spiritual and ultra-godly and look at what this verse is saying. It says that wealth, the wealth of the rich is their fortified city. A person with wealth has built for them a fortified city. It's protection. Money can protect you. Money can avoid. You don't know what disasters are going to come your way, but if you have got wealth, you can take care of it. Many situations. I've been in situations where a flat tire devastated me. I mean, I have no money. I have no spare. I'm stranded. No phone. My life is over. Why? A $7 flat tire, and I'm done. You begin to learn, if I had 20 bucks in my pocket, I could fix this problem. And if you apply that to life, if you had a wealth of money, problems could be dealt with. You've all been in situations where if you had no money, one little thing just derailed your entire family. Where a little bit of wealth, that derailed, you just stay right back on track. That is what that verse is talking about. That verse is talking about if you want to build some natural protection, get yourself some wealth. And the flat tire is a matter of just getting it fixed and keep it right on going. But poverty is the ruin of the poor. If you look in some things I've got written down there, it says, because of these two extremes, both of which can lead to sin, at the end of the book of Proverbs, a guy by the name of Agur prayed that God would deliver him from both riches and poverty. There is a problem with being wealthy and trusting in that wealth is you can now buy your way through many situations and sometimes buy yourself right out of God's will. Become presumptuous. You don't need to follow God. You can take care of all of your problems. So there is a place where that can become a problem. Job speaks of this. He says, I have never trusted in my wealth. Now, Job was a man that was wealthy beyond anything we can imagine. But yet, he was living righteously. Now, understand this. Just because a person is wealthy does not mean they're in sin. It does not mean they're an evil person. Wealth says that it is a fortified city. Job knew the danger of being a wealthy man. And he says, I have not trusted in my wealth. If I have, he says, a curse be on me if I found security in my wealth. So he had wealth in the natural, but his security was in the Lord. There is a problem with being wealthy and not having the security of the Lord, is you can take yourself right out of God's will. But Agur, at the end of the book of Proverbs, also mentions poverty. Well, then poverty is the answer. He says, no, he says, if I'm poor, he says, I will be tempted to steal. A man that is poor, if they have a family, they may be tempted to steal to feed their family. And Agur is praying here, I don't need extreme wealth, but I don't want poverty either, because if in extreme wealth, I won't need God. In poverty, I'm going to continually be tempted to steal and take care of my family. So I'm just asking to stay in the middle. But this still allows you to have that wealth of a fortified city. It goes on, chapter 10, verse 16. The wages of the righteous bring them life, but the income of the wicked brings them punishment. They both make money. The righteous make money and it produces life. The wicked make money and it ends up being their punishment. It's how they spend it. He who heeds discipline shows the way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray. He who conceals his hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. There's two negative things here. You can lie to people by being hypocritical and saying things that aren't true to try and manipulate them and motivate them with compliments. Or you can go the other way and talk bad and run their character down. Both are evil. When words are many, sin is not absent. There are many things about sin. The longer you talk, ever notice that? You can have a good conversation for 5 or 10 minutes with somebody, but after you talk for about 30 minutes, an hour, hour and a half, there's only one other thing left to talk about. That's complain about everybody. So after about 5, 10 minutes, let's draw this thing to a close and let's move on. It says right here, when words are many, sin is not absent. If you've been talking for an hour and a half, you may have slipped into sin. Now, that's not a blanket statement, but I have experienced it. A great conversation for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden, that makes me mad too. And did you hear what they said? It is more entertaining. So where words are many, sin is not absent. But he who holds his tongue is wise. Once again, stop talking and listen. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. You find a wise man, a righteous man, what's he saying? It's valuable. You find a man who's not wise, he's still talking, but there's no value in what he's saying. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of judgment. The blessings of the Lord brings wealth, and he adds no trouble with it. A fool finds pleasure in evil conduct, but a man of understanding delights in wisdom. What the wicked dreads will overtake him, what the righteous desire will be granted. When the storm has swept by, the wicked are gone, but the righteous stand firm forever. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. This is talking about the guy who's got a sluggard as an employee. Send him on a mission, it's like putting vinegar on your teeth or blowing smoke in your eyes. It'd be better if you didn't have him. You ever had someone that you worked with, it'd be better. Why don't you just not do that? Just don't work. Just go sit down. Because the more you work, the more miserable it becomes. The fear of the Lord adds length to life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. The prospect of the righteous is joy, but the hopes of the wicked come to nothing. The way of the Lord is a refuge for the righteous, but it is the ruin of those who do evil. The righteous will never be uprooted, but the wicked will not remain in the land. The mouth of the righteous bring forth wisdom, but a perverse tongue will be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is fitting, but the mouth of the wicked only what is perverse. That last one is saying, if you're righteous, one of the blessings that you have is knowing what to say. Have you ever been in a situation where someone wanted you to answer a question or say something or comfort them, and you didn't have anything to say? That happens to everybody. This is saying a righteous man will have something to say. But a wicked man, only thing that can come out of his mouth is perversion, things that are corrupt, feeding out of his heart. Father, we thank you for your wisdom. We thank you for the wisdom that you've laid for the foundations of the earth. We ask that we may see bits and pieces of it here in these Proverbs. We ask that we ourselves may grow and become wiser. Father, we do thank you for your word and ask that you may bless us in Jesus' name. Amen.